Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye. This is our second reading from the book of Genesis. Last week we looked at Genesis 1, and we focused on the creation story. Now we're being introduced to the character of Abraham. He's actually introduced to us late in Genesis 11, and we get his understanding of why he's been introduced to us in Genesis 12, where God says to him, "You're going to be a great nation. I'm going to create a great nation from you." And he does this several times. Unfortunately, what seems to happen is that there's a series of adventures that Abraham and his wife Sarah have, but no children, no progeny, no children that are there. And so they sort of take matters into their own hands, and they line Abraham up with Sarah's servant, Hagar, and from that becomes the child Ishmael. And that Ishmael is said to be the first of the descendants of those who became Muslims. All right, Abraham is the father of three of the major world religions: Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Two of those through Sarah, one through Hagar. The scene that we have right now is a scene where God has appeared a few days before, where he has told Abraham that he's still going to have progeny. And Abraham has done the same thing that his wife is going to do in a second or two. He laughs. He's 99 years old. His wife's 89. And he laughs. And he says, "Right, sure, uh-huh." And so that's where we pick it up. This is Genesis 18. "The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, 'My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourself under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant.' So they said, 'Do as you have said.' And Abraham hastened into the tent of Sarah and said, 'Make ready quickly three measures of choice flour, knead it and make cakes.' Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while they ate. They said to him, 'Where is your wife, Sarah?' And he said, 'There in the tent.' Then one said, 'I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son.' And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I've grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?' The Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh and say, "Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah shall have a son.' But Sarah denied, saying, 'I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. He said, 'Oh yes, you did laugh.'" Going to chapter 21, verses 1 through 7. "The Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah bore him. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Now Sarah said, 'God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me.' And she said, Who would ever have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. This is the word of God for the people of God. One thing I really like about the Bible is that it gives us characters that at times have qualities that we can look at and say, boy, I really wish I could be like that. And then other times, the Bible gives us characters that are just like you and me. Just like you and me every single day. And Abraham and Sarah are the first two extended characters that we really get a lot of character development on. We have like nine chapters that are devoted to them, and we get a certain amount of insight into them. And you and I are there in Abraham and Sarah. Abraham, for example, there's a couple of times where he sort of gets himself in a little bit of trouble. He's afraid of a Pharaoh, or he's afraid of a king. And what does he do? He tries to pass his wife off as his sister. And at least at one occasion, she's even placed into a harem kind of thing, where she's introduced into that. And the honorable character in both of those narratives turns out to be the Pharaoh and then later the king. They're the ones who basically say, I didn't know she was your wife. You told me she was your sister. Abraham and Sarah are also like us in the aspect of the fact that they don't always trust God. You know, they sort of take matters into their own hands. I mean, they had this conversation with God where God says to them, God says, at least to Abraham, says that good things are going to happen to you. I'm going to build a mighty nation out of you. Even changes their name. At the beginning of the story, Abraham is Abram, which means father of many. Great father. And Abraham means father of nations. Sarai means princess. And Sarah is her name at the beginning. Sarah means princess of many. So you clearly have these name transitions that are going on to indicate sort of this future hope. But the reality is still such that they don't have children. And even though Yahweh, God, says to them multiple times, you're going to have children, you're going to have progeny, they sort of take matters into their own hands. And they line up Abraham with the handmaid in order to give Abraham progeny. Now, you could take this reading, and we probably ought to do it for another day and use it to focus a little bit on hospitality. But today, I really don't want to focus on the hospitality. I want to focus on this dialogue that God has with Abraham and Sarah and focus on their reaction to the conversation as well as what it is that God actually says to them. The dialogue includes this element of wording, which says, is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? And that has come after Sarah has laughed, and frankly, it's after Abraham has laughed. So the question is anything too wonderful for the Lord? And what's our reaction to that? We sometimes laugh and we say, huh, right, sure, uh-huh. We follow that. Now, the first time that Sarah laughs here with this, the first time Sarah laughs in the story, she's laughing from despair. She's laughing from not having a future. In her world, progeny are everything. Children are everything. It's a matter of how your line is extended on. So God has said to Sarah, God has said to Abraham, you will have children. You will be responsible for creating a great nation. Even changes their names to do this. And what's their reaction? Their reaction is skepticism. Their reaction is despair. Their reaction is no. We clearly reject what it is that you're saying to us. Now, this raises a question, because how often are we like Sarah? How often are we like Abraham in this? We either have the idea given to us that God can do wonderful things or God can't. There's no sort of in-between ground. Walter Brueggemann, who is one of the professors that I heard back in May, we're studying in, on Monday night his commentary on Exodus. But he's an Old Testament scholar who is Christian. He's a United Church of Christ pastor. And he says that this question that's before us with this whole conversation with Sarah is one of fundamental importance. You either believe that wonderful things can happen with God, or you don't. And if you don't, you're limiting God's power. You're limiting who God is. You're bringing this God that we believe can do anything, and you're saying, no, there's certain things you can't do or choose not to do. And so is this God for us someone who can do these things or does not? Sarah, on this particular scene, is voting no. She's voting no. She's saying, no, I don't believe there is everything God can do. All things are not possible through God. Psalm 30, we'll talk in there about how God brings out of our mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, mourning, God will bring dancing. There's another psalm where God lifts us up out of the miry bog, out of the pit, out of the miry pits of our life, and gives us joy and gives us understanding. Jeremiah 32 will have a passage very similar to this, which is there anything that's impossible through God? And we read the Mark version of this, and there's a Luke version as well, where Jesus says, is anything impossible with God? Paul will handle this in Philippians. He will say, I believe in God, who through him all things are possible. But at this particular moment, this particular scene, Sarah is like us. She's you and me. Because we're just like Sarah at times in our lives, and we sit down and say, nope, we're a skeptic. Just chalk us up as someone who comes in to worship God, but we don't believe that God can do all things. So something happens between Genesis 18 and Genesis 21, and the things that happen are not Sarah and Abraham's faithfulness. What happens in between 18 and 21 is God's action. God takes an action, and Isaac is the result of that. Isaac's name actually tells us part of the story. He laughs. That's what Isaac means. He laughs. So every time she would call out to Isaac for the rest of his life, she would be reminded of what it was that God had said in her reaction to that. I laughed. And God laughs back at me over my inability to understand what it is that God can do or will do on my behalf. So Brueggemann offers that as the other side of the question. Sarah in 18 is saying no. Sarah's saying in 18, no. And by the way, Abraham in 17, chapter 17, he laughs as well. He's also saying no. So the no is not isolated to Sarah. It's both of them. They're both guilty of it. And then in 21, we have Isaac that is there. God has been faithful. God has stood on the promises. They could have stood on the promises that God offered to them, but they didn't. So they get to see this from the backside. The question then comes for us, where are we going to live? Where are we going to reside? Where are we going to draw our power? For at least in chapter 18, Sarah seems to be drawing her power from an experience that's very much like a Good Friday experience. She draws her power from despair. And then in 21, she seems to draw her power from hope, from joy. I could offer to you from a Christian perspective, she seems to draw her power from Easter. It's a movie that came out about 13, 14 years ago called Monsters, Inc. Anybody ever seen that movie? Monsters, Inc.? I noticed the parents raised their hands. Monsters, Inc. Part of the story in Monsters, Inc. is that the monsters live in a parallel world, and they have this scream canister. The scream canister that they have, and they go into children's rooms and they scare them and they collect the screams of terror, of anguish, of despair, and they take that, and that's what they use to power their own world. Do I have that right? Is that the way it goes? And somehow, over time, the children's effectiveness, their effectiveness in getting these starts to go away. And they decide that what they need to do now is to become comedians. They change the orientation of how it is that they are focused on how it is they're going to collect the screams. And they go into the same in the children's room, but instead of scaring them, they become comedians. And what they discover is the screams of laughter are 10 times more powerful. The screams of joy, the screams of hope, the screams of optimism are 10 times more powerful in powering the world. That's a movie. It's a cartoon, as a matter of fact. But I wonder if the value of that isn't sort of the nature of what's going on here in this particular scene, which is this idea that what it is that we need to focus on is the laughter, that instead of despair, the laughter that brings us joy, the laughter that brings us hope, and being clear in our view that we can rely on God's promises. We sang a few moments ago, standing on the promises. But you might ask yourself, what are the promises? What are those promises? The Bible's filled with them. The Bible's filled with promises. So I would suggest to you that taking a look in the Bible as to which ones you want to use for you and how they help you out. But I would say to you that one of the ones for me personally that I really enjoy looking at is John 10:10, which is the fact that Jesus comes into the world not to make us painful, not for this to be a painful, austere experience, but rather to give us life abundantly. Give us life abundantly. And how does he do that? By setting us free to be at liberty to work in God's world, using our gifts to help make the world a better place. And the stuff, the baggage that we carry along in our lives that says, well, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Raise your hand if you've got something in your past, if you have nothing in your past for which you're ashamed of. No hands go up. But what Jesus offers to us is the opportunity to leave that stuff back there in the past. So what are the promises? The promises are that stuff has been set aside. It's been moved to a different place. What is another promise that I find comforting? Is that I'll be with you. He doesn't say that we won't suffer. He doesn't say we won't live life. But he just says, I'll be with you. I'll be with you to the end of the time, end of the age. I don't know about you, but I find that very comforting. I'm not alone in the world. The Canadian church. There's my Canadian illustration right there. We have some Canadians at 10:30 going to be here. The Canadian church is composite of the Presbyterianism, United Church of Christ, and Methodist Church. But the United Church of Canada offers, we are not alone. We live in God's world. Again, I would find corporately that very comforting. That having been said, I don't think that God only speaks to us through the Bible to the body. There is times that God speaks to you individually, just like God spoke to Abraham, just like God spoke to Sarah. Now, how you go about listening depends a great deal on you, but I would say one of the things you have to do to listen to God is intentionally stop and listen to God. I don't mind telling you that in 2002, 2003 time frame, I was struggling in ministry. What I was doing and how I was going about it was just not working. It was not working for me. And I finally, in July of 2003, turned around to Marilyn and I said, I'm not doing what God has called me to do. And she said, I felt that way for a year. Why didn't you tell me that? She said, you had to come to that conclusion yourself. You had to come to that conclusion yourself. I wasn't listening to God. There was all kinds of evidence in my life of what was going on that wasn't being very fruitful. I wasn't getting anywhere with what I was doing. So that ought to have been evidence for me that I needed to step back and re-examine. But no, I was stubborn. I was convinced I knew exactly what God wanted me to do. Anybody else here ever had that happen to them? I bet everybody here could raise their hand to that one. So you have the corporate promise. I come to give you life abundantly. We have the corporate promise that you won't be alone. We get those that given to us through the Bible. But at the same time, we have God speaking to us one-on-one in our prayer time, in our devotional time, in our time of walking in this creation, meditating alone, just sort of walking out there and trying to understand what it is that God has called us to do. I don't know how God will speak to you. I doubt that it will be show up and be on your shoulder and a megaphone in your ear. I'm not sure God will show up as you're in your tent and ask you to make biscuits for him. I'm not sure God will ask you to precisely go out and kill the fatted calf. But I'm convinced that God will speak to you in some kind of way. And the critical thing is to listen. That's part of the promises that God gives to you, is that God wants you to listen. And God lays out for you the promise that if you go on this path, you will be successful. Jeremiah 29. God says in Jeremiah 29 that I know the plans that I have for you. I know what they are. That tells me that God has individual plans for each and every one of us that's here, whether it's doing something through music, whether it's doing something through the leadership of the church, whether it's Salt Lake Rescue Mission. Al needs to be commended for what he has done with Salt Lake Rescue Mission. He did this for a number of years by himself, or as a leader by himself, and now he's gotten corporate buy-in here at Hilltop. He sustained that because he was seeing fruitfulness of lives changed there at Salt Lake Rescue Mission. How it is and where it is that we have to go about understanding what God says to us is both important to us as a community, and we develop some understanding of that as our tradition. But at the same time, it's also a personal experience that you need to have with God. You do that through listening to God, whether that's prayer, devotional time, Bible reading, going to be... You know what works for you. You know how it works for you. Find something and do it so that you can listen to God, because God will offer strategy and plan for you, just like he did for Sarah, just like he did for Abraham. My skepticism of where I was in 2003 was my skepticism. It wasn't God's. Fascinating. Sometimes God has more faith in us than we have in ourselves. I can't tell you the number of times that happens. God has more faith in us than we have in ourselves. Sarah is blown away by the fact that here she is at this age in her life, and here she gets to be nursing a child. God's promises are important. God will be faithful to us. God will lead us to a place of hope. It's critical for us to understand that hope for us is not I hope I get $1 million, or I hope that my car starts today when I go out there and turn the ignition over, or I hope that the 10:30 service will have 200 people at it, or I hope, whatever the number, whatever they are. That's not what hope is in the Christian concept. Hope for us is the fact that over against all of the available evidence that is all around us out there, that God will continue to be with us, God will sustain us, God will continue to offer alternatives to suffering and death. God will say that Good Friday may exist, but the hope of Easter is what allows us to be God's people. So go back to the Brueggemann question. You can live in a world where you can say there is a limitation to God's power. There is a limitation to how wonderful God can be. Or there is unlimited. There is no limit. It's safer to live in the world where you say no. It's safer to live in that world, because when you say yes, it actually suggests to you that you then start leading your life in that kind of hopefulness. in that kind of direction, in that kind of following God and living your life with the understanding that there is no limit to what it is that God can do. So the question is, do you believe it enough to warrant a change to your life, to really believe that being kinder and more forgiving and believing that Hilltop can get a church started and that Hilltop, you get the idea. The question is, do you believe it? If the answer is yes, you do, then you need to start going about your life in such a way that you can display that. The Pope is going to be in Washington, D.C. and New York City this week, and he took the name of Francis. The Pope is actually an order of he's a Jesuit, but he takes the name of the Franciscans. And St. Francis actually said one time, preach the gospel in all that you do, and when absolutely necessary, use words. That's the invitation for us today, is to live our lives in such a way that people can look at us and see what love looks like as we walk out into the world. So they can see what love looks like, what God looks like when He gives us life abundant. So what it looks like when we are a people that say, we know that God is with us and is on this journey with us, and we are faithful. We will laugh in joy. Let us be an attitude of prayer. Gracious and loving God, we are offered with so many choices, and the choice is, and this one is to choose despair or to choose hope and joy. Lord, lead us to a place of faith that we choose joy. We choose optimism. We choose to follow your direction because we stand on the promises that you make to us as a community, and we stand on the promises that you make to us as individuals. Through the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ that empowers us to be these change agents in your world, let us now follow that. And all of God's children say, amen. Please stand as you're able. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.